to say roll call.
Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Roll call for Thursday, February 22nd. Agar. Present. Anderson.
Here.
Anselmi Dalton.
Here.
Baldwin.
Here.
Barnard.
Excused.
Boner.
Excused.
Bouchard.
Here.
Burns.
Excused.
Case.
Present.
Christensen. Coe. Dockstetter. Driscoll. Ellis.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Excused.
Rothfuss.
Excused.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flader.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Boner present.
Boner. Excused. Present. President Bebout.
Excused.
26 present, 4 excused.
Prayer by Father James Jason Dickey. Thank you.
Before we start, I have a surprise for everyone.
My. We have 3 kids, and we have one that's from Wyoming. Her name's Marina, and she's 5 years old, and she's hiding her Rice Krispie treat because she doesn't want anyone to steal it. So, yep. So, let us pray to the Lord. Dear Stavrorina, most holy God, we pray that you give each of us a pure heart and a way of speaking the truth in love. Grant us uprightness of purpose, powers of reasoning unhindered by passions, and conduct that becomes for those who fear you in perfect knowledge of your commandments. May we enjoy health in body and spirit. Grant us a life of peace, genuine faith and living hope, sincere charity and bountiful generosity, patience that knows no bounds in the light of your truth to proclaim your goodness to us, that forever and in all things placing our trust only in you, may we bound in every good work, and that in Christ your gifts may increase in every soul. For to you belong all glory, honor, and majesty, and the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, now and forever, and unto the ages of ages. Amen. May our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, bless and keep you always, especially on this day and throughout the week, and thank you for everything that you do. Amen.
Will you join me in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There you go.
I want to give you something.
Oh.
Hi, how are you?
Which one? One of yours, Mr.
Yeah, do we have one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The second one.
Okay.
Serena, can you stand over here?
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I want to give this to Father. It's a little coin to let him know how much we appreciate him and his words of wisdom and getting us off on the right foot, and especially with your daughter.
Yeah, Marina.
Marina, welcome to the Senate. This is good to have you here. We need a little bit of levity and intelligence and help. Can you help us out today? She's nodding. There's a special senator back over in the corner over there. His name is Senator Coe. They're calling him the great senator. Maybe you could go back there and really help him out as well. Anyway, here you go, Father. Oh. That's for you. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
All right. It's always a pleasure and a blessing for me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we get a picture? I like a picture.
Yes.
Do we have a... I want to get a picture of Alan. Okay, would you mind?
Yes.
You want your picture? Get in here,
yes,
Michael.
Yes, get in here.
Drew. Chris,
hello.
Where's Chris? And
I'm Michael.
Let's get the leadership. Come on, gals. Come on, John. Come on, Lisa, get up here. We'll get a picture. We'll have to have some good memories out of all this. Where's Chris? There he is.
Can we get a bar? Can we get Stephen Pappas?
Stephen Pappas.
You know what happened this morning?
Thank you.
We're supposed to do our television show at 8 o'clock. I waited 20 minutes for Steve. We never showed
him. Oh, really? Did he forget?
Thank you.
If you just wanted to disagree with somebody, Eli, you could call me now.
All right.
Good, Chris. Touché.
Oh, no, tomorrow.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Just a photo of with the kid, you know? So, all right. All right. All right.
All we've done is a pledge. Can you show me his excuse? Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 21, 2018 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, that report is adopted. Our doctor for the day is Phil Karen. He's a doctor here in Cheyenne. I don't see him here, but he's here. Okay, we have no nurse for today. Today in Wyoming history, the Wyoming Battalion allocated for the war in the Philippines was engaged in operations around Guadalupe Church. Anybody know what year that is? Senator Wassenberger, you are 1899. I have an award for you for being so close. Today is day 9 of the proposed 20-day session. It is also the last day for bills to be reported out of committee in the House of Origin. Tomorrow is the last day for our committee of the whole in the House of Origin. And also, and I'm sure you're all very much aware of it, third reading for the budget bill. Do we have any reports from standing committees or messages from the House? We do not. With that order of business, bills on second reading. Senate file 43, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill, would the reading clerk please read it in first?
Senate file 43, organ donation, training and timely post-mortem examinations.
Members of the Senate, I'm still wound up from all the good debate last night. I apologize for that. Senate file 43, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate file 56, first reading of the Senate, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 56, Real Property as a Collateral Bond.
Senate File 56, having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 62, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 62, Omnibus Water Bill Planning.
Senate File 62, having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Senate File 66, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 66, Volunteer Health Care.
Senate File 66, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objection, so ordered. Senate File 67, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 67, Wyoming Public Lands Day.
Senate File 67, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections, so ordered. Senate File 78, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 78, Opioid Addiction Task Force.
A good task force. Senate File 78, having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Heard no objections? So ordered. Senate File 79, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 79, Vertical Takeoff and Landing Aircraft Regulation.
Senate File 79, having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Heard no objections? So ordered. Senate File 84. Second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 84, Motor Vehicle Registration, Deployed Military Members.
Senate File 84, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection. So ordered. Senate File 86, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 86, DUI Recidivism Reduction, Driving Privilege Sanctions.
Senate File 86, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection. So ordered. Senate File 95, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 95, Medicare Discrimination.
Senate File 95, having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection. So ordered. Senate File 110, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 110, Paramutual Events, Horse Racing Account.
Senate File 110, having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection. So ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list for third reading?
Well, you should ask, Mr. President. Yes, we do have a consent list. Mr. President, I move for third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 22, Orders of Protection Revisions. Senate File 40, Commercial Air Service Improvement. Senate File 41, Organ Donation Promotion Task Force. Senate File 42, Professional Licensing, Applicant Criminal Records. Senate File 55, Water Development 3, Account 3. Senate File 60, Wyoming Women's Suffrage Pathway Highway Designation. Senate File 69, 2018, Large Project Funding. Senate File 80, Vulnerable Adults. Senate File 112, Retirement Center and Pioneer Home.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe there's an amendment to Senate File 40. Is that correct, Mr. Vice President?
No,
there is no amendment. Okay. Does anyone wish to have any of these Senate files removed from the consent list? Okay. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 22, Orders of Protection Revision. Senate File 40, Commercial Air Service Improvement. Senate File 41, Organ Donation Promotion Task Force. Senate File 42, Professional Licensing Applicant Criminal Records. Senate File 55, Water Development Account 3. Senate File 60, Wyoming Women's Suffrage Pathway Highway Designation. Senate File 69, 2018 Large Project Funding. Senate File 80, Vulnerable Adults. And Senate File 112, Retirement Center and Pioneer Home. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
On the consent list, Agar.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Boner.
Aye.
Bouchard.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Ellis.
Aye.
Emmerich. Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nethercott. Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Bebout.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 22, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 22, 30 aye. Senate File 40, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no. Bouchard,
aye to no.
Barnard, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Hicks, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 40, 22 aye, 8 no. Senate file 41, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 41, 30 aye. Senate file 42, are there any changes? Bouchard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 42, 29 aye, 1 no. Senate file 55, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 55, 30 aye. Senate file 60, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 60, 30 aye. Senate file 69, are there any changes? Agar conflict. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 69, 29 aye, 1 conflict. Senate file 80, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 80, 30 aye. Senate file 112, are there any changes? Agar?
Aye to no.
Bouchard?
Aye to no.
Anderson? Aye to no. Peterson? Aye to no. Coe? Aye to no. Christensen? Aye to no. Barnard? Aye to no. Ellis? Aye to no. Moniz? Aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. And Selmy Dalton, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Pappas, aye to no. Nethercott, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 112, 14 aye, 16 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 22, Orders of Protection Revision, Senate File 40, Commercial Air Service Improvement, Senate File 41, Oregon Donation Promotion Task Force, Senate File 42, Professional Licensing Applicant Criminal Records, Senate File 55, Water Development Account 3, Senate File 60, Wyoming Women's Suffrage Pathway, Highway Designation, Senate File 69, 2018, Large Project Funding, and Senate File 80, Vulnerable Adults, have passed the Senate. Senate File 112, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 112 has failed to pass the Senate. Senate File 116, third reading of the Senate file. 15 first. excuse me, Senate File 15, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 15, Large Project Account Modifications, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to economic development.
We do have a third reading amendment. Reading clerk, please read that in.
Senate File 15, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 17.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 15 and ask for your favorable consideration. This is more of just a technical correction than it does anything else. It fully allows the state to recoup the appropriate level of loan based on the yield. I got a little handout for you. Treasury issues three types of revenue-generating notes. You have bills, you have notes, and you have bonds. And the way this is worded now, if you go to page 2, it says indexed to a rate not less than the rate of United States Treasury note that most closely matches the term of the loan. So what this does is just go in and it includes bonds. And the reason for that is if we do a large project and we extend a loan for longer than 10 years, and we're going to index that back to a note, what we probably should do is actually index that to a bond because the bonds generate a little higher interest rate. The way this currently reads now is we would be given a discount rate to anything that exceeds 10 years on a loan through this account. So it just provides the flexibility to make sure that if we're doing loans that exceed 10 years, that it would be indexed against a Treasury bond instead of Treasury note. That's all it does. Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for any questions.
Question being called for. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 15. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Senate File 15, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file pass? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar.
Aye.
Aye. Anderson.
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton.
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin.
Aye.
Aye. Barnard.
Aye.
Aye. Boner.
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard.
Aye.
Aye. Burns.
Aye.
Aye. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll.
Aye.
Aye. Ellis.
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich.
Aye.
Aye. Hastert.
Aye.
Aye. Hicks. Hicks.
Aye.
Aye. Kinski.
Aye.
Aye. Landon.
Aye.
Aye. Meyer.
Aye.
Aye. Moniz.
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott. Aye. Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Aye. Peterson.
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Aye. Scott.
Aye.
Von Flader.
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger.
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 15, 30-aye.
Senate File 15, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 15 has passed the Senate. Senate File 116. Third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 116, Retirement Income Security Task Force 2, sponsored by Senator Anderson, an act relating to the administration of government.
We do have an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read that one in?
Senate File 116, third reading amendment number 1, page 2 after line 21.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 116, ask for your favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, the first part of this is cleanup language. The good senator from the center part of the state, we had an amendment in to include retirement board, and it simply changes the retirement system. As most of you know, it's just two completely different entities. And then the second part of it is deleting treasurer and then having the retirement system administer this. This was in consultation with both entities and felt it was the best fit for it. So that's why we brought the amendment, and that's the amendment, Mr. President.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question being called for. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 116. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Senate File 116, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the Senate? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar? No. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
No.
No. Christensen? Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercutt?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Flader? Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No.
Coe,
aye to no. Bouchard,
aye
to no. Christensen, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate file 116, 18, aye, 12, no.
Senate file 116, having received a majority, affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. Senate file 116 has passed the Senate. We got any standing committee reports or messages from the House? They're probably still over there trying to get through second reading. Okay, we're at the order of business. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion?
Yes, I do, Mr. President. And just by way of confession, the reason there's not any messages from the House is they have to be taken and censored. They were not good. So anyway, with that, Mr. President, you see the board before you. Actually, if we make it to that list, and with the couple that there's one for tomorrow, capital construction tomorrow, and two that'll come out of committee. If we make it to that list today, which is certainly very doable, we've done more in one day than that. We'll have heard every bill that passed out of committee. So there's our task. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole for consideration of bills on general file.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We have our secret weapon today, members of the Senate. That be Senator Hastert.
Okay, John, she's all yours.
All right, here we go. The first thing we got to do is shut Perkins off. You got to click on the... There we go. Are we ready? Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 111. The reading clerk will please read the file.
Senate File 111, Property Taxation, Digital Currencies, an Act Relating to Property Taxation, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Somebody? That's Senator Bebout, Mr. President.
Chairman, when the committee hold round report, do so with a favorable recommendation to Senate File 111. I'll yield to the sponsor.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Bring you Senate File 111, the issue of time. I'm going to run through it pretty quickly for you. This is the latest of what's turning into economic development bills for the state of Wyoming. This is the fifth in the line of blockchain and crypto bills that have come through the legislature. This refers to property taxation. It exempts virtual currencies from property taxation. Very simply, folks, what it does is it makes it a legal currency in the state of Wyoming. So if you go to page 2 on the bill, it talks about money and cash on hand, currency, gold, silver, which is what we consider currencies, cashiers, checks, certified checks, and adds virtual currencies. Virtual currency means any type of digital representation of value that is used as a medium of exchange, unit of store or value and is not recognized legal tender by the United States government. This bill's a critical piece of the five bills that are coming. We're already seeing businesses anticipating move to Wyoming due to these bills. With that, I'd stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Senate File 111? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I've got to admit a certain amount of ignorance to virtual currency and so forth. So if this bill passes, so it's recognized in the state of Wyoming, do I, as a landlord or a merchant or anything, do I have to accept virtual currency?
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, good senator from Cherokee. Absolutely not. It's no doubt. You don't have to take anybody's personal check. You know, the legal tender has to be taken. That's the whole difference between it and legal tender. But no, you do not have to take it.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peabout's motion to adopt. No, excuse me. All those in favor of Senator Peabout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 111, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Senate File 111 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 120. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 120, Government Efficiency Project, an act relating to the operation of government sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chairman, to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Landon, excused, Senator Hastert, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 120. There is a standing committee amendment and ask for that amendment to be read in at this time.
Senate File 120, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, after line 20.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 120, and for a further explanation on this good bill and the amendment, I would turn it over to Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Have for your consideration Senate File 120, Government Efficiency Project. This is a bill from the Management Council. This is the, if you remember, I'll rely on some of your recollection from when we did the introduction. This is the bill that continues the statewide efficiency study that came back. The statewide efficiency study came back with a few items. It found out some very interesting things. One thing I found out that we do some things very, very well. Our Department of Health and the way they use statistics and what they're doing on self-correction and what they're doing, they said that the Department of Health in Wyoming is a national leader and that people ought to be coming to Wyoming to see what they do with their dashboard and how they're doing what they're doing and how they're trying to do self-improvement. There's a lot of things that there's things that everybody can do better. They also are very complimentary of our auditor and so even A&I and some of the things that they do. We're not doing everything wrong, but they did find a number of things we could improve. Also, when this body, we also had put out a request that they look at the Medicaid eligibility errors. And that they did that as well and found out that that's one of the things that the department done. The department has been in four cycles of a self-correcting mode that they found out that the error rates have varied somewhat, but with the new eligibility systems, they've driven those down. They've bounced around between 10% and as low as 2.5% of an error rate, and they continue to improve on that and look at that. So, we came back to the report. If you look at the bill, the first two pages really are kind of a report about a very basic report on the things that the commission did. It did come back with a estimate that if we invested one-time investments of somewhere between $10 and $20 million of one-time investments, that we could save for approximately $100 to $200 million a biennium if we started to do some of the things that they suggested. And so we come back to you with that. You've seen in the budget bill, you're already starting to see a number of things. There's about four or five of those recommendations that have been incorporated into the budget bill that we debated the last couple of days. You've also seen there'll also be from Management Council most likely an assignment of another five or six issues to study during the interim. to the respective standing committees to look at some of those issues and see how we implement those and undertake the necessary legislative changes to accomplish some of those if those committees deem that those are appropriate. Going to page three, we start off by establishing the State Savings and Efficiency Initiatives account. This is an account that will be in the State Auditor's Office, and this is where the funded appropriations will go. This is also the account that will, as savings are realized and identified and paid out, they'll be redeposited in this account. Now, the purpose of this account is to fund these things to the extent they can be self-funding, to capture those savings, and if we do this right, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, at the end of the biennium, we should have as much or more in this account than what we start with. In fact, if we do it right, we should have substantially more. So we go through there, and what that is then used to fund the various projects that come forward that are identified from either the legislative or the executive branches to begin to work and provide those savings, process improvements, and government operations. You go down through specifically trying to go back to the report that came back in November 30, the bottom of page 4, the top of page 5. You'll see we're trying to do a number of these specific recommendations that were brought back in the report. That will bring us to the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. I believe that has already been moved, has it not, Mr.
Yes, it has.
Chairman?
Been read in.
And so what we do with Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is we add, if you go to page 5 after line 20, you'll see Romanette 7 there. This has a Romanette 8, which was another recommendation that came out of the committee, came out of the commission study and the work of over the summer to establish a pilot program for performance-based budgeting for up to three agencies with the aim of submitting performance-based budgets to the legislature as soon as the 2019 general session. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, a performance-based budget is different than a zero-based budget. What it is trying to tie specific programs to outcomes and achievements. And so as you work, it's not appropriate for every agency, but it's appropriate for some that have programs. That's one of the ways that you help monitor the efficiency and success of programs is put on a performance-based budgeting so you can tie the expenditures to the performance. With that, that's the basis of this amendment. If there's questions, I'll stand for questions. If not, I would call for
the any discussion on the amendment. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 120, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment has passed. Back in the bill.
So if you go to the bottom of page 5, the top of page 6, and particularly on page 6, you find that those, as projects come forward, those are the criteria that they're supposed to be as the governor's office, the project management office, looks at these projects, that they will that they want to have those. So the idea is to have both metrics, goals, and outcomes identified as well as savings so that those savings can be captured and these suggestions can be analyzed going forward. So then you go through that. We have those again as we talk about identifying savings. You get through to page 7, over to page 8. We're talking about once those savings are identified, that when we identify specific savings, those will be captured and redeposited into the account in the state auditor's office. Additionally, as savings are identified, this provides for a 25% retention by the agency so that they can so that the agency can apply that 25% across other priorities of the agency. The object there is to simply not pull every dollar, but to provide some incentive for agencies to continue to participate to improve their processes and increase efficiencies and savings. Go to the bottom of page 8. There's a reporting requirement to come back and report quarterly back to the JAC. Go to the top of page 9. That's the project management office. This is a group or an office under the office of the governor that will kind of drive this and manage this project. It's set up so that they can either be consultants or it can be individuals that are hired as state employees. You find as you go across the country, states that are doing this, they do it sometimes with consultants. In Tennessee, for example, they actually hired an individual who was very experienced in this and had expertise, and they actually made him the chief operating officer of the state. So we've got that flexibility for the governor to do that either way, but it's going to be important that we have a knowledge transfer of the information into state office. Page 11, over onto page 12, establishes the governor's grants office. This is an office to provide a resource and expertise within the governor's office that can be available both to school districts and throughout the state to identify and increase the reimbursement rates for federal funds that are out there. It's not to chase new federal dollars, but to ensure that we're getting the federal dollars that we're entitled to in existing programs. We had some discussion of that. A similar case would be, well, if you remember my good friend from Dutch County and his Medicaid case that we talked about yesterday. Then the bottom of page 12 over to page 13 is the government's annual Ideas Festival, which is an opportunity for state employees to come forward with ideas to generate savings, increase efficiencies in the operation of state government, and that there's an award of up to $25,000 per team and $5,000 per member of a team for the best ideas that are that can contribute to this. Make sure our state employees are involved. Go to section 2. Section 2 continues the work of the commission for the remainder of the biennium. It expands the commission to 11 members. After listening to conversations from various state agencies, we're adding the chief information officer or his designee from ETS, we're adding the director of ANI or his designee, and also the member of the state auditor or her designee to participate and expand that out. Then they're enthused and ready to work on that with everybody else. The commission will report back to both the JAC and also provide that liaison between the management project office and so to make sure our legislative and executive efforts are moving forward together. Section 3 is the appropriation of $10 million from the general fund into the account to begin this project. And also then you get to page 18 are the additional appropriations for the per diem and work of the commission to continue its work. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I believe this has a significant amount of possibility and probability of success. I've had at least a couple of two agencies come to me just during the interim and talk to me about how they're already anticipating this, how they're already generating ideas about how to save money. This has an opportunity to, I think, be very successful and generate, if you think about it, the structural deficit we were facing, this is an opportunity to close that by as much as potentially a quarter. And so with that, I'd stand for questions and ask for the body's favorable consideration on this bill.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I really commend the work by my friend from Natrona County on this bill and others who have been involved. And I am certainly on board with trying to do anything we can to do better and more efficiently and whatever. I have to confess, though, that throughout the process of following this, I've had a little bit of heartburn, always do, when we get to talking about, say, on page 5, when we talk about strategic sourcing and saving money through purchases. And where the heartburn comes from is something that I deal with maybe more than any other issue as a state senator, and that is what do we do about all of the out-of-state sales and all of our bids going out-of-state and all of – so, you know, I guess I'd like a little more comfort on that level with the idea of strategic sourcing. Does this mean that we're going to move away from our Main Street businesses? Because – most often, you can save money if you go somewhere else. In all my years working for an agency, I always tried to work very hard to stay on Main Street, and sometimes we had to modify, for example, printing projects just so that, Mr. Chairman, we could keep it in our local hometown. So that I guess I'd like a little more comfort there and maybe some understanding of just all of what strategic sourcing involves. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question for the sponsor. I just have a couple of observations for us as a legislative body. I, too, wish to commend the sponsor, the senator from Natrona County, for all of his work, his initiative, after attending a conference where this was first learned about and his initiative in moving it forward, the hours of dedication above and beyond the regular legislative business to help move it forward. So my first observation is everything old is new again. The second is that hope springs eternal. So I direct you to Wyoming Statute 28-1-116, performance-based budgeting from 1995, mandated by this legislature, where it says the governor shall do this, and the governor shall submit, and the governor shall do this, and a list of all the things the agencies are going to do. And you can tell that in 95, the blush was not yes off the rose, and there was great hope as to what might come out of that. I think there's a lesson for us there in that all of these strategic initiatives, whether they're in our organizations or our personal lives, can just fade out like dew before the morning sun without the commitment of folks like this on a continuous basis, because this is not easy work. It's not easy for the executive branch, and you're asking for a level of accountability that most agencies are unaccustomed or and or unwilling to submit to. And this is going to be a multi-year effort. It will not be fast. So it's been done before. We're going to do it again. But as Coach used to say, we're going to run that play again until we get it right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Senator Von Flattern.
We are on the bill, aren't we?
Yes, Mr.
Okay.
Vice President.
In the answer to the local sourcing, basically staying on Main Street, one of the reasons we didn't go with somebody that was going to work on a percentage of what they saved the state, and we went to somebody like this outfit, was we wanted to have that input ourselves on whether or not we would agree to buy, because they can say you can go down to the big city to the south of us and purchase 5,000 computers at, you know, a savings of $180 or $300, and so we show you this great savings and we get a percentage of that. We don't want that. We want to have the input on whether or not we stay on Main Street or we do go to that big supplier, but at least we get that choice.
Senator Perkin.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments. A couple things about kind of going in reverse order. There's a number of agencies, or a number of, this is actually an outgrowth. There's probably 20-odd states that are doing various forms of this. I can't use the various names, the proper names out there. They're going about this. But I think that's one of the differences that I've analyzed as we've gone forward about what would make this different than a previous effort. And I think one of the keys is one, the appropriation, that we're actually putting the money together to get this done, so that you're not simply saying, go forward and do this, and somehow magically have it disappear out of your own budget and your own efforts. But we're putting this together so that, one, we have, one, the resources. And it's important that in the bill we've tried to make that protection so it's not grab bag, that you can only get to this the extent that your existing budget won't provide it, or that the savings will be realized won't be realized quickly enough to pay for itself. But also you have this project management office, which is a commitment, a two-year commitment, to bring in under the governor somebody who will drive this process and bring it in and make it. It's a collaborative process. It's not a top-down process. Bring people in to talk about how we do these things and how we implement them. And so that's why you look at we went to zero-based budgeting. It was a miserable failure, but performance-based budgeting is a little bit different. I think it's a more refined than it is now, but that's why we have in here for a trial to see if we can get it to work. Back as far as Main Street, the State Auditor's Office is already working on a part of this, and they have a back end. They have a back end of software that already exists to bring this in, where you can register as a vendor and become on the state and be a vendor to the state. And so part of this will be to marry that back end with the front end, so that you get a lot of these things. If they're already doing this at the University of Wyoming, they're about a year ahead of us on this thing. They're recognizing about 15% savings on that. It works on the front end, much like you would go online and go to an office supply or another products. You type in what you want and you order it, and then within 24 hours it'll appear in your office. And that's happening through local vendors. On the back end, the auditor's office is having vendors come in. They can get on. There's a way to do this through scheduling so that they can meet prices and they have the opportunity to compete and meet prices. I know I've talked with ETS. They've already talked to the number of their local, including local vendors, about how to provide these services in a consistent and cost-effective way. And so there continues to be a great concern, and there should be continue to be a great effort on making sure that Wyoming companies, while not assured of being awarded, but have the fair chance to compete. And that's what, in respect, that's what it's really all about, is making sure that the Wyoming Main Street has a fair chance to compete in this process. And most of them can. When they're given the opportunity, they can compete and compete very well.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 120, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 120 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 93. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 93, Child Sexual Abuse Education and Prevention, an act relating to education, sponsored by Senator Anselmi Dalton, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move when Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 93. Defer to Senator Anselmi Dalton on this good little bill.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you have before you a standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 93. Could I have that read into the bill?
Senate File 93, Standing Committee Amendment number 1, page 4, lines 20 through 23.
Senator Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 93. This deletes Section C of the bill because it was a mandatory component. And when I looked at it and thought about it, it seemed difficult to measure. And I was trying not to make it mandatory. What it did was sort of gave a reverse incentive, in the words of one of my eloquent colleagues. And it basically said, if you do this, then you have to measure it. So we didn't want to have that, so we deleted it. We want the schools to be able to implement this in a way that works for them. Are there any questions or discussion on the amendment?
I'll do that. Any further discussion on the amendment? Question on being called on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Anselmi Dalton's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 93, please say aye. Those opposed? We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this bill is permissive and simply authorizes a school district to provide instruction on sexual abuse education. Again, essentially inappropriate versus appropriate touching. There's no fiscal note, as it's not a mandate. Senators, this is an important bill, and it's not a real fun topic to discuss. The goal of this bill is to prevent children from falling prey to sexual abuse or getting away or remaining silent if they do. It's particularly relevant because 90% of the time, these victims are being preyed upon by someone that they know and trust, and often it's in the home setting, unfortunately. A Wyoming victim of sexual abuse testified to our committee that her mother told her when her stepfather was abusing her in this way, if this is true, this will tear our family apart, and we can't survive without his help. This is a sad fact that this is what happens. 1 in 4 girls are abused in this way by age of 18, and 1 in 6 boys. The recent gymnastics scandal is also an indicator, and in my family, a doctor in our community also preyed upon a member of my family in this manner. So it's a personal bill to me as well. The Wyoming Department of Education superintendent indicated this is a way to start discussion, and the Attorney General's office, their Division of Victim Services, indicate there are very many federal grants available for this funding. VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, INVOCA, there's a $4 million alone that could fund this. In the AG's office, they have pass-through funding, general funds, and surcharge money from criminal fines and fees available for this training to over 63 victim service organizations statewide, including 23 domestic violence sexual assault programs already in place in each of our counties. So this isn't even hard, even if we made it a mandate. There's money out there, but we're not doing that. We want the schools to embrace it. We're not trying to shove it down their throat, so to speak. We just want them to understand that this is happening. Be aware, Senators, and this is where I ask you to listen. Please give me your ears here. We teach children stranger danger. We teach them dare. We teach them anti-bullying. We teach them duck and cover. But there's no statewide plan to teach them how to get away until today if they're a victim of sexual abuse. Please give these victims a voice to just say no.
Any questions? Discussion? Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about how early in the education process are these young children going to be exposed to this? I know my wife's a kindergarten teacher, as you all know, and they talk about this in real general terms in kindergarten, but I just want to know how specific it's going to be and what time definitely it's going to start.
Any further discussion? Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. It will be age-appropriate training at the school level, age K through 12, is how it will start.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 93. Please say aye. Those opposed? Senate File 93 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 94. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 94, Tobacco Use Non-Discrimination Repeal, an act relating to labor and employment, sponsored by Senator Anselmi Dalton, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 94. And that to present the bill will be Senator Anselmi.
Senator Dalton. You got it.
Well, it's funny. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's funny that I was actually at the wrong desk because I was actually going to steal some of his words for my bill. So in the eloquent words of my colleague to the right, who would not let me use his mic, the section of the bill I'm repealing either does nothing or is bad. Essentially, this bill repeals a law enacted in 1994 that prohibits discrimination by an employer in hiring against the use or non-use of tobacco outside of work hours. Law is not well promulgated. Attorneys that I know that are pretty well versed on law in the state haven't heard of it. There have been no lawsuits under this. And I feel that we really just need to allow employers to have a right to choose what kind of things that works in their place of employment. I gave you a handout which shows that tobacco smokers are more likely to miss work 6 days versus 3 days. And so that's why it's important also. If a hospital wants to have a mission statement and a purpose that they would prefer to, for example, in a very famous clinic back east, they essentially said, we are going to not hire smokers, or if we do hire smokers, we're going to give them cessation programs. So that's a fair mission statement for someone. There's no federal law establishing a right to smoke, and it's murky how our statute is. I would ask you, as the equality state, to treat our employers equal and let them decide how to run their businesses. I ask for your favorable consideration of this bill and would ask for any questions.
Any further discussion on Senate File 94? Senator Burns.
Just so I understand, if we do pass this bill and we repeal this provision, then I can refuse to hire somebody because they smoke cigarettes or a pipe or chew tobacco. Is that correct?
Any further discussion? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure that when we're looking at the language, I mean, if you look at your statute, it says outside the course of his employment. And, I do think this is worth some consideration because We are talking about activities that people are engaging on outside of their employment, and so the question is whether or not an employer can discriminate based on those outside activities. I don't think we can gloss over this, and so I do have concerns about this bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill. This is the kind of bill, Mr. Chairman, we really need more of. Get rid of some of these things in the statutes and let the private sector take care of matters. There are certain kinds of jobs, Mr. Chairman, where it's not safe to have somebody who's a smoker because it is addictive. People will do it. If they're doing it outside of working hours, they will do it during working hours. You have obvious cases, somebody who's delivering propane, for example. It isn't safe to hire a smoker. Sooner or later, they're going to forget, and you have the risk of an explosion. But even, for instance, in my business, it could be quite rational. We have considerable risk of range fires. Certain times of the year, the cheatgrass will burn like kerosene. It doesn't take much to set one off. And a smoker is, they don't just stop at one. They have cigarettes continually through the day at varying rates, and sooner or later you run the real risk of having a fire, Mr. Chairman. This is one of those things that we just, we've been rejecting bills that put mandates on employers in terms of their hiring and who they can and can't. This is getting rid of one of those. Hasn't been enforced, but if you leave it in the books, anytime somebody has to fire somebody that's a smoker, or doesn't hire somebody that's a smoker, there's a risk that there'll be a lawsuit involved. So I think we're much better off without this piece of legislation. Strongly urge the Senate to pass it.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, very reluctantly, I rise against the bill. I understand the sick time issues, the health issues, but my concern is we talk a lot about discrimination and not being a discriminatory state in different manners. But when we're talking about being able to discriminate regarding someone's employment against what they may do in the privacy of their own home when it comes to an activity like this that's legal. And I'm not going to debate whether chewing or vaping or anything is better than smoking, but if you really think about employment based on what people may do, it's something that's legal in America, in their own homes, away from the job, I think we're reaching into somewhere we shouldn't be going.
Senator Burns. Mr. Chairman, against this bill for a couple of reasons. It includes chewing, which is no danger if you're driving a propane truck or standing in a patch of cheatgrass. But it does raise the question, is if I've been working for somebody for 10 years and I start chewing, does that give them the authority to fire me? And then the last point is, there are cultures in this state who use tobacco as part of their religious ritual. Can they be fired or not hired for that reason? Because this extends to off hours. Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to provide the body a quick primer on what this bill, what the statute currently says. So, what the state of Wyoming has done is carve out an additional protected class in Wyoming that is equal to race, religion, gender, all of those things of which are currently illegal in Wyoming and at the federal level, and said, we're going to put tobacco users on that same scale. That seems a bit absurd and flies against the face of capitalism and, quite frankly, republicanism. So enabling employers to make the right decisions about their employees is what this bill is actually stating, and is really leveling that playing field about not giving tobacco users or non-users because the bill is equal to that. So you can't discriminate against anybody for being a non-tobacco user either. So, for example, if I wanted to work at a place that sold tobacco products but didn't use them myself, also could be illegal under this law. So it's equal application to tobacco users and non-tobacco users. But what's really important to the overarching principle that we're not expanding these protected classes to what really are characteristics that shouldn't be receiving that level of scrutiny under the law and really interfering with private employment rights, most notably. Regarding the concern of interfering with private activities that people are allowed to do, you know, then I would like to see legislation coming forward that women who wear green suits should be protected because that's something that can be lawfully done, and therefore a reason to terminate shouldn't be that. But that's not what we say. This is an at-will state. Employers can terminate employees for any reason at any time, whether it's lawful. To address the good senator from Sheridan's concerns about the use of tobacco in religious ceremonies, well, that is already in violation of law, and that would be religious discrimination, and that individual has a right to contest that employment decision at that time. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Senator Vebo. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the sponsors. So then, if you have a situation where someone were to I happen to used to chew tobacco, thank goodness I quit, but my other people in my employee could have concerns with me because I chew, and then I would have an issue that I would have to treat other people differently. I haven't listened to all the debate. I apologize for that, but I got to tell you, this looks like a bad bill to me.
Further discussion, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the bill, we're thinking about it. Mr. Chairman, on for the bill. We've got a governor in the room, so I thought maybe we'd upgrade him. We're thinking about this a little bit backwards. This is not adding new law and adding new protections of any sort. This is recognizing that a non-protected class was added to employment law in the past that just doesn't belong with the other protected classes. So, for example, Mr. Chairman, I've golfed a few times in my life. A couple of times. I'm not very good at it. I would not call myself a golfer. As a matter of fact, I would be a bad golfer. So if you wanted to take into consideration right now when hiring me that I'm a lousy golfer and I would be a poor person to choose in a foursome, you could do that. And I don't need a protected class as a golfer. I don't need to add to the statute, well, you cannot be discriminated against when being hired based on whether or not you are a good or bad golfer. And that's rational. Mr. Chairman, we understand that it's very reasonable not to have a protected class in statute or a non-protected class in employment law because we don't need to reiterate those things and say you can't discriminate. You can. Quite frankly, you can make choices on who you discriminate against in employment law and who you don't as long as those are not protected classes and federally recognized or state recognized protected classes. So the choice is, are we recognizing tobacco users as a protected class equivalent to race and gender and religious protection? This bill says no, that's probably not reasonable. And this is a good bill. This is not a proactive action to provide additional protections. This is recognizing that in the past a protection was provided that went too far. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just again, let's look at the language. If we look at 27.9105A, Romanet 1, that's where you see the language that prohibits discrimination because of age, sex, race, creed, color, national origin, ancestry, or pregnancy. That's the list. Cannot discriminate. But we're talking about subsection 4, Romanet 4. And here's where we're talking about tobacco. It says, for an employer to require as a condition of employment that any employee or prospective employee use or refrain from using tobacco products outside the course of his employment or otherwise discriminate against any person in matters of compensation or the terms, conditions, or privileges of employment on the basis or use of non-use of tobacco products outside the course of his employment. I mean, this is a long definition. Unless it's a bona fide occupational qualification that a person not use tobacco products outside the workplace. I think that we talked about that issue. Nothing within this paragraph shall prohibit an employer from offering, imposing, or having in effect a health, disability, or life insurance policy distinguishing between employees for type or price of coverage based on the use of or non-use of tobacco products. And then it talks a little bit more about the differential rates. Mr. Chairman, I would argue that this is not an absolute right. We contain all kinds of qualifiers in here. What we're really getting after is the person that maybe works 8 through 5 and part of their employment requirement is they don't get smoking breaks. They have to comply with that. But when they go home, if they want to have some used tobacco, I think that it's really a stretch for an employer to get to make the decision on whether or not that person's livelihood, I mean, their livelihoods depend on using that tobacco product on their own time. I think this is a bill that has some further serious implications. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kinski.
This is a great bill. I totally get that if your employer discriminates against you because you're a racial minority, you have the right to sue them. If your employer discriminates against you because of your religion, you have the right to sue them. Take them to court. If your employer discriminates against you because you're a smoker, they have the right to sue you? I mean, that's what we've done in Wyoming. And smoking is not on a par with those other protected classes. This needs to go away. There's just another and a practical reason, and I can tell you firsthand as a former smoker, is just the health effects of smoking. I mean, not only is discrimination against smokers not bad, it's the right thing to do. It's to say, you need to quit. You need to quit. And I can tell you the only way you'll ever get a handle on your health care expense, and more companies are doing it, is they're saying, if you use tobacco, here's the add-on to your health care premium. And let me tell you, the number of smokers drops dramatically. You can cajole, you can play, you can beg, you can wheedle, you can show them videos, but when it hits them in the pocketbook, they sit up and pay attention. Years ago, a friend of mine's an oncologist, and they were debating Hillary Care and about nationalizing health care, and my friend says, I know how to drop health care expense 50% within a year. I said, Dr. How? And he said, ban smoking. It is the number one leader of premature death and cause of diseases, and it is all self-induced. We absolutely need for employers to be able to say, you need to quit. You must quit. I on and for the bill. This is absolutely an excellent bill.
Further discussion, Senator Barnard.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a doctor, I would hire employees, and if an employee comes in and their fingers are yellow, their teeth are yellow, their breath smells, their clothes smell, I think that's offensive to me and to my patients, and it could cause me to lose money because these patients might go to another doctor. So I think I have a right to make that kind of differentiation when I hire or fire people.
Senator Perkins.
The question, I don't know the answer to this. I don't know the answer to this question. This is a sincere question. So, is an addiction a covered disability under the ADA? And so, how does this work in with the ADA, if anybody knows?
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, the answer to that question is maybe. It depends if the employee has reported it and if it interferes with a substantial function. So typically it's not, particularly smoking, but other types of addictions may be, but that's a really rare circumstance. I want to get away from the topic and what may be a red herring, which is the prudence of smoking. I think everyone knows that it's bad, and it's bad for business, right? And it's bad for healthcare costs. We all know that. But that's not the purpose of this bill. The purpose of this bill is really employers' rights and not having an absurd result of equating tobacco usage or non-usage with race discrimination. It's not appropriate, and it's not an appropriate protective class in our statutes in Wyoming. It does interfere with individual property rights. Don't tell me who I should and shouldn't employ
regarding their tobacco usage as a business owner. That's not the right result. If not, we need to do a laundry list of additional protective classes, including those who consume too much sugar, those who consume alcohol, those who drink water, those who eat cereal, and all of those additional things that we humans do. This goes too far, and this particular bill reins that back in for why we're doing special legislation for tobacco and rising that to the level of race discrimination is just absurd. I encourage you to right the ship and make our laws appropriate. Thank you.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just for full disclosure, should this bill go down, I intend to bring legislation next year that includes sugary drinks and coffee to this list of tobacco also.
Any further discussion?
Question.
Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when Senate File 94, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 94, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 94 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 96. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 96, Early Childhood Education, an act relating to early childhood education, sponsored by Senator Rothfuss, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Pass recommendation on Senate File 96. There is a standing committee amendment. Ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 96, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 8.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment and for an explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment, defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 96, Early Childhood Education, is an attempt at adding some additional efficiency to our state government that we've been talking about on the Education Committee and in this body for a number of years now. The concept, Mr. Chairman, is that we have four different agencies with early childhood intervention and education programs that currently operate in a siloed manner. There's not a lot of coordination. Most of what they do is actually bring in federal funds or take state funds and distribute those out to either school districts or local programs or act simply as a pass-through and don't engage in any way. This legislation tries to coordinate them by bringing them into one office within the Department of Education. It doesn't expand government. It doesn't require an appropriation. It actually requires coordination of which positions should be moved, which roles should be moved. But so that all of the early childhood intervention and education can take place sourced from one office so that some coordination can take place, discussion, and basically trying to make sure that these programs that we have in the state are working together as we consider ways potentially to move forward early childhood education and intervention. Mr. Chairman, looking at the legislation and going through it, it's relatively straightforward and simple. On page 2, on July 1st, 2019, that's when this goes into effect, that's when things would change, so I'll point out to the body that we'll have an entire interim and a legislative session before any changes are actually made. That's intentional to make sure that we get this right and we have all of the stakeholder input and feedback we need to ensure that the communities that are affected are able to have feedback and input into the process. But on that date, the functions within the Department of Family Services, Department of Health, and Department of Workforce Services that administer early childhood education programs are transferred to the Department of Education. You can see on lines 14 through 18 that along with all of the functionality, all positions, personnel, appropriations, property, equipment, contracts, and everything else are going to be transferred and under the control of the department within that office. Paragraph B on page 2 goes along to say that the governor shall transfer those positions on that date along with the personnel, appropriations, property, and everything else associated with those agencies and their functions related to early childhood intervention and education on that date, and will coordinate with the state superintendent and the department on deciding which positions should be moved over and basically how to roll this out and do it correctly. On page 3, in the middle or towards the end of that paragraph B, is a discussion that the Department of Education shall report to the Joint Education Interim Committee regarding its recommendations no later than November 1st, 2018. Now, Mr. Chairman, let's see. I'm going to go back and do the amendment in a moment, actually. I'll do that right after I go through the bill. Bottom of page 3 is a discussion of trying to make sure that we've got an engagement process where no later than November 1st, 2018, the Department of Education, basically the departments affected, will report to the Joint Education Interim Committee related to any statutory changes, rules, procedural amendments, or anything else that might need to be affected through statutory change to facilitate this consolidation of early childhood education and intervention. This is also the opportunity where we get stakeholder input and really try and find a way to ensure that all of the interests of the various groups are being met as we move these entities together into one office within the department. On to page 4, paragraph C indicates that the Joint Education Interim Committee will consider all of those findings and potentially bring legislation to the 2019 General Session. The paragraph D indicates that any rules, regulations, or in particular contracts that are currently in place will also be transferred along with movement of those offices on July 1st, 2019. And the contract aspect is essential for some of our providers, particularly the Child Development Centers, the CDCs, that work on a contracted basis with the Department of Health currently. Those contracts would basically remain as is and be transferred over to the new entity. Page 5 and 6 are conforming amendments in statute. Page 7 goes on to the duties of the state superintendent, where the state superintendent would then be the state authority for early childhood education programs, would administer early childhood education programs to the extent permissible under federal law, administer early childhood education funding programs and coordinate those programs to ensure a high-quality education. On to page 8, paragraph C. Is a facilitating the attainment of those goals consistent with early childhood education, providing a comprehensive network of programs for developmental disabilities, establish minimum standards and approve policies, and then create a division within the department to assist in this administration. After that, Mr. Chairman, on to page 9, we have some conforming amendments within statute. And finally, Mr. Chairman, on page 10, we have the effective date, where the provisions of this act mostly go into effect July 1st, 2019, but some of the sections go into effect immediately to ensure that we can start doing the interim work. At this point, Mr. Chairman, I'll go into the amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and talk a little bit about why we did these things. I believe it's already been moved, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chairman. It has. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 was to address the concerns of the child development centers. I think a lot of us received feedback, potentially from our communities and from the CDCs, that they had a couple of concerns. The primary concerns that they presented were, first of all, that Part C of IDEA, that's the littlest kids, might not be transferred over along with Part B. They wanted to make sure that regardless of where those were, they were together. So they wanted clarification in the legislation that both would be transferred if a transfer were occurring. So you can see page 2, line 8, after health, we explicitly include the Individuals with Disabilities Act, IDEA, Part C, early intervention, and Part B, Section 619 preschool. So that basically includes all of what the CDCs cover and addresses the primary concern that the CDCs laid out. The second concern that we heard from the CDCs with regard to the legislation as originally drafted was a potential concern that their views and interests would not be considered in the stakeholder input. And as drafted, that was reasonable. So we added on page 4, line 8, that along with what we would hear from the departments, we would hear from early childhood education stakeholders, which is certainly consistent with the interim committee process. Mr. Chairman, when we were done with this legislation, it's my feeling that in the Joint Education Committee, we had consensus. There were no further objections. Everyone understood that this was going to be an ongoing process. It would be an interim process where we would seek stakeholder feedback. We would have an opportunity in the next legislative session to make any changes that were necessary to assuage those concerns. And then, theoretically, July 1st, 2019, we would enact this if everyone agrees with the process along the way. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. With that, I would ask for any questions on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and if there are no questions, I would call for the question on that Standing Committee Amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 96, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment has passed. I'm back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, with that, I would also answer any questions or address any concerns on Senate File 96.
Further discussion, Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In favor of this bill, is recommended when I was on appropriations 2 years ago. The Director of Health actually recommended that we do this. It is also a recommendation from our Management Audit Committee in the Phase 1 report. And as you know, the Phase 2 report was released about a week ago in favor of this very thing. So I commend the sponsor of this and would ask for your favorable support.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this is a bad bill. Mr. Chairman, I have numerous objections to this particular bill. First, this is not, Mr. Chairman, the right time to do a reorganization. My principle in dealing with government reorganizations has long been that we ought to structure the executive branch the way the governor wants it done. That's chief executive. That's who's held responsible for performance of the executive branch. We're about to get a new governor. We all know that. We don't know who it's going to be. We don't know whether the new governor will favor or oppose this kind of a reorganization. We ought not to make a decision on that at this time. Let's get the new governor in place and see what they think. So that's a timing issue. Second, I am deeply concerned about our child development centers. After the failure of the management audit, I'm on management audit, to come with a conclusive report, I went looking for data on what other states were doing and found some, and found a couple of our neighbors are, at least in part, and sometimes I think they had the Part C, the birth to two groups with the health agencies and the rest with the education agencies. And it looked like they were not being nearly as effective in dealing with the developmental delay problems that children have, because they were not emphasizing, as we have, the high level of screening that's resulted in a higher level of kids in these programs, the kids with disabilities. Much higher percentage of the ones that are out there get found in Wyoming. And the result is their programs appear to be less effective. Mr. Chairman, third reason, the reason we put the programs over Department of Health to start with was we were afraid that the educators were much too oriented toward the traditional classroom model. And you get into these younger ranges, Mr. Chairman, that's not always very appropriate. You need to do things differently. And my fear is that they will not be as effective as the way it is now, simply because they won't be as age appropriate. Third, or fourth, I guess, when you look at the statistics, and I'm talking here about the children that need special ed have developmental disabilities, because that's a major part of this. Our educators in the state have developed some very expensive habits. And in the K-12 system, for 2016-17, the special education expenses figures I have which I believe were derived from the Education Department website, were $18,063 per child was costing. In the Child Development Centers, those costs were $8,237 per child. This is a bill that will increase our expenditures, I think, significantly without producing results. So, Mr. Chairman, for all those reasons, I think we're much better off with the current organizational arrangement. I know there's a problem with the director of the Department of Health. That will be solved. We're going to get a new governor, I presume, a new director, and we'll return to more normalcy there. But this is in good part a reaction to a particular personality who doesn't happen to be interested in these programs. And I don't think it's wise at this point to make a change based on a personality that is, in all probability, not going to be there, because that's what happens when you get a new governor. So it looks to me like empire building on the part of the educational establishment. Frankly, they've got plenty to do improving the quality of our K-12 system. I think we're better off without this change.
Senator Landon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, with great respect to the Chairman of Labor, I disagree pretty much with everything you just stated. When you go into cost comparisons, for example, our CDCs out there are a completely different model, and he got that part right. But when you compare against the public school system, many, many more things go into that model in the public school system that the CDCs do not have to worry about, such as busing their students or whatever. Frankly, in all my years on the Education Committee, Mr. Chairman, I have wondered often about how we could get a handle, how we could even find out how much we're doing in early childhood. As the sponsor of the bill pointed out, we literally have programs that are in four different agencies in our state government. And this bill, one of the things I like about this bill is that we can pull everything together and get an idea of just where we stand in early childhood. We've worked very hard, by the way, at something that's near and dear to you and I's heart, Mr. Chairman, and that's those child development centers. I think this stands to bolster their effort. Through the years, frankly, we have not emphasized them to the degree that was indicated. We've actually left them behind in this year's budget discussions. We have outlined for you why we pulled some more money into that line item, simply because of that. At any rate, I want to commend the sponsor. He has worked this bill while I was a little tied up in money matters, but I think it's a good bill. I think it gives us plenty of time to get a lot of stakeholder input. It's a good bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Driscoll.
Chairman, thank you very much. Hope not to talk about future bills out of business on this. I've got a few questions. One I'd like to start, and I think our local ones do a phenomenal job. They do more with less. They've done very different than the K-12 model. These guys really do more with less, and maybe that's due to some other factors. But my questions have to do with once we move into education, are the teacher qualifications going to change? Is their pay going to change? Because once they're in K-12 and under that model, these guys pay significantly differently than teachers do locally. At least on mine, they do. As far as the consensus, have all the local ones come in and been in favor of this? And lastly, does administration, how they run, these all have local boards that help run them, or are we just erasing them and we're going to create a new one under a Cheyenne officer? Is this still going to exist under the local model? Because right now there's huge local input into these, and I have concerns about one more agency in Cheyenne.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
First of all, I think that early childhood development is probably one of the most important things that we can task ourselves with. We have to move forward on it. We have to get, I think, a lot more aggressive with it. However, I think that this is a good start, but I have some of the same concerns that the good senator from the northeast of the state shares. And that's putting this under the Department of Ed. Because once we put it under the Department of Ed, I think the early childhood development program is going to fall under the same constitutional protections as K-12. And we're going to have some cost overruns that we can't control. And so what I would suggest is that although I'm 100% in favor of what we're trying to do with the bill as far as moving childhood development forward in the state, I think because of that, and even as much as I hate new departments, I think that if you're going to have a statewide relationship there, is that you develop that, you put underneath that department the efforts that we're using now and build on those efforts. And I think that it's going to take a little longer than a 20-day session to get this thing right. Because if you look at the fiscal note, there is no fiscal note. We have no idea what this is going to cost us one way or the other. We know it's going to be significant costs one way or the other. But, you know, I applaud the efforts of these folks going forward on this. It's something that we can't lose. We can't drop. If this doesn't go through, we need to make sure that we pick it up. We need to make sure that education picks it up. But we need to have that firewall between the constitutional protections of education and early childhood development, or we'll run into the same situations that we have now. We just don't have any ability to control any costs. But I think we need to have some more money in it. And I applaud the good senator from the Ivory Tower. Thank you very much for bringing this to attention. Let's don't lose sight of it, though.
Senator Wasserberger. Senator Wasserberger.
Mr. Chairman, I am deeply offended. Actually, my good friend from Albany County is a very smart and outstanding legislator, but I would like to answer some of the questions. The question of whether or not this will be a constitutional issue, if you look at your Constitution, it starts at the age of 6, right? So this is all these students, these children, are under that age level. Unless we come in and actually name another year for those kids, then they have no constitutional requirements like we do in our K-12 system. So I don't think that's an issue. And maybe I'm wrong, but if you look at your Constitution, there's an age to it. And that's the reason why you can't, as an elementary principal, tell people, their parents, that they have to send their kids to kindergarten because their kids are below that age. And our attendance requirements do not apply to them. Secondly, the money issue, the money should move with each one of these four programs. And it shouldn't be any cost increase to us. Yeah, and then lastly, when we talk about, oh my goodness, the K-12 system costs $18,000 per kid, and I agree with that, this costs $8,000, it's because our Part C kiddos, are the primary focus of that program is to send the early childhood teacher into the home to teach the mother. They teach the mother to teach the child, and then the mother teaches the child. They're not in a brick-and-mortar building. When they get to Part B, if they still have disabilities, then they go to the CDC. And that actually costs a little bit more. But the overall cost of our CDCs, and the other part of it is, I think everybody is in agreement within this profession of early childhood education that they're willing and want to do this. There may be some silos out there that don't, but at least testimony at our committee, they were in favor of it. So I would ask for your favorable support.
Any further discussion? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I guess one of the questions I have that I haven't heard explained so far associated with the bill is, What's broke so bad that we have to completely restructure the whole system? What's broke? Is it really that bad, or does it just require a few tweaks? And so that question lingers in my mind.
Further discussion. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good discussion and very good questions. I'll try and address some of those that haven't been already addressed by my colleagues. The first one I'd like to chat about is the tall senator from Natrona County's concerns about the timing and the timeline specifically. When you look at the timeline, this goes into effect July 1st, 2019. That's when the changes would actually go into effect. There is interim work between now and then, but we will have a legislative session with a new legislature before that takes place. We will have a new governor before that takes place. Presumably, if the new governor appoints a new director, that will certainly happen. And this gives us all of the opportunities we need to sort things out if we don't have it right and if there are concerns with the next administration. I know, Mr. Chairman, how easy it is for a new governor to simply appoint a new director of the Department of Health. We have a new governor today, and this morning as we walked down the hall, he appointed me Department of Health director. It was a field promotion. I'm honored to serve. I don't know how long it will last. I suspect a very short period of time, but you know, I'm taking that role very seriously, Mr. President, and I hope to do my best for you. Governor, that's right, Governor. As far as concerns about CDCs and other states and the importance of the screening requirements, I think there's some confusion on that, Mr. Chairman, in that the screening and the programs that are associated with it, the Part B and the Part C, will stay together. And I think that's the concern, is that the screening would be isolated from the programs themselves. In fact, of the other states, just 49 of them have a coordinated office for early childhood development in their Department of Education. We're actually the only state that doesn't, because coordination of this early childhood intervention just flat out makes sense. That's why the other states do it, and I realize we don't always want to do what other states do, but in this instance, it's about efficiency. As far as being afraid that the classroom environment will change, and this addresses my good friend from the northeastern part of the state as well, that it won't be as effective and that will change the qualifications for the teachers. This legislation doesn't change anything as far as those types of requirements are concerned. It doesn't intentionally. That's a feature, not a bug, so to speak. The next legislative session could make those changes if we chose to, but for the CDCs, there's an entirely separate area of statute which talks about how the CDCs are implemented. That's not changing. It's not being amended. That's not moving under the Department of State. It's simply Department of Education. It simply changes where that authority, where the organization chart lines back up for the reporting requirements. And again, it's intentional not changing those CDC statutory requirements and operational parameters because they're doing a good job. We know they're doing a good job. But that doesn't mean they can't do better when they're working with the TANF programs, when they're coordinating with the Head Start programs, when they're coordinating with potentially local school districts again. But none of that is required. It's just an opportunity for those that are working with early childhood intervention and early childhood education to be working in the same room together so that they can actually say, hey, what are you working on? What can we work with each other on? Can we have TANF kids in the same class as child developmental kids, in the same class as Head Start kids, and in the same classroom as kids from a local school district? We don't do that a lot right now. We silo them. My district has a different preschool for each of those entities. They don't talk to each other, Mr. Chairman. And that's a concern. I don't know why we have to label kids, the Head Start kids, the TANF kids, and the CDC kids. Seems like they're all, for the most part, learning the same thing. They could be doing that in the same classroom. And we have an opportunity to explore those possibilities, but we don't require it through this legislation, Mr. Chairman. I hope that clarifies some of the concerns about cost and about whether or not we're changing qualifications for the teachers. Same thing with the local boards that currently run them. Again, the statutes on how CDCs work are not amended except for the reporting authority. The reporting authority changes because we're moving it to the Department of Education. As far as the lack of fiscal note, I see here that the bill that's handed out does not have the fiscal memo. There is a fiscal memo that's available on the LSO website where you get to the bill. That provides information that's provided by the various agencies on their guess at which different FTEs would be transferred and which dollars would be transferred. But again, that's something that would be worked out during the interim as the plan is put together. So those are simply guesses, Mr. Chairman. And as far as the final thought by my friend from Carbon County about what's broken, nothing's broken. The system works. We have good early childhood education in the state of Wyoming. We have good early intervention. We have good identification. But we don't necessarily have a perfect system. And over the years in the education committee, we've heard that this siloed effect has some liabilities. And here's one that's clear. Right now, the Department of Health budget sees Part C as effectively a liability. That's a cost. Not that they don't support the concept, but this early childhood intervention costs them money. So it's often on the chopping block as something that we might want to get rid of. If it's successful, it doesn't show up as a savings. It still shows up as a liability. If you look at it in the same context, Mr. Chairman, as we do in the school foundation program, with special education, dollars spent in early intervention and in pre-K are dollars saved on special education because you have a common mission along that budget flow. So when you're trying to realize efficiencies, when you're trying to realize the efficacy of programs, it helps to be looking at the same budget where the savings occur as where the spending occurs so that we can know whether we're getting a return on investment. We can't do that now because those budgets don't even get talked about in the same day in the Joint Appropriations Committee, let alone coordinated among the two agencies. Mr. Chairman, this is a long time coming. It is not a wholesale change of what we're doing. It is a great first step to try to coordinate. And then this body, along with the agencies, can talk more in the future if we need to make changes. This doesn't make changes. This allows for a coordination of the organizational chart so that we can begin the conversation, and I hope the body will support it.
Further discussion, Senator Barnard.
I think this is a good idea, and when I first heard about it, I thought this is a great way to seamlessly take these little young kids and get them into the process to where they finally get to be kindergartners. They've got the help that they need. But I've had several calls from the local people in my district that handle the early childhood education, and what they're emphasizing is there's a difference between a behavioral approach to helping these young kids and an educational approach to helping those young kids. So I'm worried about that the educational approach is gradually over several years going to sneak in here. And one of the things that bothers me about education is that every two or three years they change something. A new reading program, a new phonics program, a this and this and this. And I worry about there's something basic with these young children. Every couple of years, oh, now we've got a new way for you to teach these young kids. Now we have a new way. And then I worry about, Mr. Chairman, right now they're going to let all these people stay. But some of these people don't have educational degrees. Some of these people have degrees in family development. They have degrees in other things. And is the Department of Education going to recognize those people? Or are they going to say after a couple of years, well, you're not really a teacher. We want you to go back and get some more education. We want you to get some more endorsements and try to change that. That's very costly to these people. So I think this is a good idea, but I still go back to the good senator from Carbon County. If it ain't broke, then why are we trying to fix it?
Senator Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Referring to page 2, line 1, it says, on July 1st of 2019, all functions of the program are transferred. In other words, I think the idea is, well, I agree with that. But if it's so important, why don't we say may be transferred? In other words, let's allow these two organizations to get together and work out their differences here. So I don't like the R part. And on line 20 and 21, it says, the governor shall transfer. And so with the amendment, they, I think they helped this bill somewhat, but I'm still a little concerned about the stakeholder input in this bill. They can have all the input they want, but this bill says it's going to happen anyway. So I would prefer to see them make it a May and allow input and see if, how that works out for us. So I'm opposed to this as it's written.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to plow a lot of the ground that's already been so eloquently plowed. I do want to speak to a couple of issues that came up. One was the coordination with Head Start. That's not going to change. The problem there is the U.S. government. It's an entirely separate program outside of any control of the state, and we can't do anything about that. So don't think that this bill is going to change that one iota. With regard to the, at least the way my center ran, there were kids from not only the developmental disability and, but they had preschool kids, so they could put kids in with normal kids, and that helped. That was done, been done right now. As far as the people that showed up to testify, having talked to the some of the child development centers and their association, they are of divided counsel. I think about a third of the centers prefer this. They have been abused by the current health department. They want out. Current superintendent of public instruction is much more sympathetic to these programs. The others can see the risks of what might happen to them long term and feel they're better off where they are. You have very divided counsel. I know my center, the last communication I had was to oppose this bill. This has been a divisive issue within that community. I really think, Mr. Chairman, the bill is premature at this time. I think we're better off leaving it the way it is. Let the educators deal with the problems, and there are plenty of them to deal with in the K-12 system.
Further discussion. Senator Rothfuss.
And a good debate. I just wanted to address those final concerns. Regarding behavioral versus education, these programs are still going to be implemented as they've been implemented. So you'll have the appropriate behavioral health programs. It's not a change in how the CDCs operate. It's a change in the organizational chart. It is possible in the future to make changes. I can't bind future legislators, but we can't in any other circumstance. One of the real concerns about that early behavioral education and intervention is that the budget might just get eliminated, and that's a concern also. That's actually a bigger concern, I think, than the concerns that that community has is whether or not it will continue to exist. This is a way to potentially protect that because we will see savings in the budget. Regarding the may versus shall, things don't necessarily change if you put mays in. If you put the shall, you start getting the planning going. But we do have a legislative session, so it then becomes up to us as the legislature to make that decision when we leave the shall in. It's up to anybody who chooses to participate, basically, if we have the may. So it is a policy choice by this body if we want them to begin to move down that pathway. And I think the shalls are going to work better in terms of providing the impetus for that consideration if we leave those in place. And finally, the good senator from Natrona County, again, talking about the Head Start coordinator, that it's outside of our control. It is true that federal funds for Head Start go from the feds straight to the entity that's providing the services. So we don't intercept those funds at the state level, and they are beyond the control of really anything that we choose to do in this legislature. But we do have a liaison position for Head Start that's funded at the state level that would be transferred. That individual tries to coordinate the activities, doesn't have authority over the activities, but tries to coordinate them. And again, coordination is really what we're looking for here. As far as one-third of the CDCs preferring this approach and two-thirds not, I'd say that was probably accurate when this began. But again, we had CDC participation in the education committee. And we took their feedback into consideration. We made sure that we had stakeholder input. We had the timeline that was consistent with their interests. And we include both Part B and Part C. When that took place, they became supportive of it. So I don't think we're at a point now where there's opposition. I think we're at a point now where there is some enthusiasm, some trepidation about how it would go forward, but a willingness to be part of the process as it does move forward. And I think that many of your local CDCs may have come out against this a week and a half ago, but if you queried them right now, I suspect they would all be for it. A lot of them changed their mind, and I don't know of any right now that are against it. If you do find one that is still against it, I would like to hear about that so that I can give them a call and address their concerns. But to my knowledge right now, the CDC community is supportive of this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I urge the body to vote for it.
Any further discussion?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 96, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Senate File 96 says pass Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor of Senate File 96, please rise. All those opposed? This is going to be a tough one. Well, pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed, the vote was 14-15 for this. So, pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed, a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? No. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Yep.
No. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 96, 15 aye, 15 no.
Senate File 96, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-SA, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 17. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 17, Cease and Transfer Priority List, an act relating to prioritization of municipal solid waste facilities, cease and transfer projects. Sponsored by the Minerals Committee. Was referred to Committee Number 9, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Rothfuss, and Von Fladern. Excused, Senator Perkins. Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Fladern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill should be less controversial and should go quickly, I hope. So I move, and especially with the eloquent speaker that we have presenting this, I move and the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration of Senate File 17. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 17, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 10.
And, Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 17, and I ask that you call on Senator Anderson.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 17 is the annual prioritization of municipal solid waste facility cease and transfer projects that we have authorized the expenditure of previously, and it appropriates the funds for the list. The amendment goes back to page 3 and eliminates, I believe it's five projects that have been completed, and I'd like to take a look at those. That page 3 is the list of the priorities for the DEQ to do. Line 10 is delete entirely. That Uinta County solid waste project for $1.4 million is done. Line 20, the Wheatland Town project is done for $2.5 million. Next page 4, line 3 and 4, the High Country Joint Powers Board and HANA, that project is done for $800,000. Line 12 and 13, we would delete the High Powers Board again and HANA. That has been completed, $1 million. So that leaves the list. Obviously, it's going to be rearranged, and things will move up and down. But the priority list, the reason that they don't come out in order is that the community has to apply to the DEQ and fill out the proper paperwork to get the thing done. They also have some matching funds, and sometimes they don't come up with the matching funds. So the priority list is what the DEQ thinks should be done first, but not necessarily do the local communities think that is the first priority. So that's the reason it does not go off in priority. So that's the bill. It's an annual bill that we do to inform the Senate of where we're spending their money. And I urge your passionate vote for it, this holistic bill. Thank you.
Senator Anderson, do you want to deal with the amendment?
The amendment was read in. I would move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
And move. Do you have a question on the discussion on the amendment?
Question. Would you have discussion? Question. No, question.
We're on the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, we're back on the bill.
Any questions on the bill?
Yeah. Any further questions on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 17 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 30. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 30, Notice of Hearing to Reopen an Estate, Amendments, an Act Relating to Decedents' Estates, sponsored by Senator Von Flattern, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a positive recommendation on Senate File 30, Notice of Hearing to Reopen an Estate and Amendments. To present the bill will be Senator Von Flattern.
Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you've all been waiting for this exact bill. And this is landmark legislation. What it does is go back to, on page 2, line 5 and 6, it strikes the reason to send a notice to everybody by registered mail and instead insert certified mail, return receipt requested. Registered mail is about a little over twice as expensive as certified mail. So we are, and there happens to be at least one judge we know of, that won't take anything except what's written in statute. So we are changing registered letter to certified mail, return receipt requested, and it is about less than half the cost. And when you have 10 or 15 or 20 people that you need to notify about a change in the estate, this gets very expensive. So I ask for your aye vote on certified mail versus registered letter.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report or do so with a favorable recommendation in Senate File 30, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 30 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Oh, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we stand in recess for about 10 minutes to give the staff a chance to stretch their legs.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, we're in recess to the sound of the gavel.
Move around whenever you want.